Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Quinn.
Your voice.
Yeah, here we are.
Pretty sexual.
I am giving deep voice. It is.
Am I magical? Oh, do I have laryngitis? I care about Griff. I gave him that fucking hamster, which is something he's been asking for a long time. We went to a friend's house that had a penguin that copied him, and he was like, I really want an animal that copies everything I say. And I got him this blue hamster that copies everything he says. And boy, howdy, that kid loves a copycat. Problematically, it is his like favorite form of flattery, to a point where all his teachers are complaining about him copying them.
Wait,
at school.
What do you mean?
Griff mimics his teachers.
Give me an example.
Everybody get out your notebooks. And Griff's like, everybody get out your notebooks. Like, he tries to copy them. And then all the kids laugh, and it's not great.
Oh, poor his teachers. How's he doing?
This time of year, can I just say, this time of year is so, I'm watching you put on chapstick. Like, I'm covered in snot. Everyone is sick right now.
Mm-hmm.
Matt has such a bad ear infection. His ear's oozing stuff, and I made him go perform last night. Adam was supposed to have people over last night and has had a stomach ache for 2 days and went to the emergency room, and they were like, yeah, you have appendicitis.
Is he okay? And does he have to get his appendix out?
He does, but it wasn't like it's not an emergency surgery. He has some swelling, some inflammation. So they gave him medicine. They want the inflammation to come down before they do the surgery. So he takes the medicine. They check it today and see if he's less inflamed. And then they plan the surgery around that.
That's awful. Poor Adam.
He's in great spirits about it.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Via text. Like, I didn't talk to him on the phone, but he was very like...
I mean, what a relief to know.
Mad that he can only have clear broths and otherwise fine.
But also, like, how great is it that you're like, I have a stomach ache, and the doctor's like, yeah, I don't know what it is. Hopefully it'll end. And then sometimes they're like, oh, here's exactly what it is, and here's the exact treatment that we're going to do. And it will be over when that happens. And you're like,
agree.
Oh, great. Great, great, great. And then you have
my biopsy tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
are you so excited?
Man, I just hope it's that same really mean doctor I had last time that
fingers
was like,
you
crossed.
Moved.
Don't move.
Fingers crossed.
Put me to sleep, bitch.
Put me to sleep. Do you think you should take like a Klonopin or an edible or something before you go?
No. I you know what? Somebody one time gave me like real pain meds to get my IUD out. And it made me feel a little bit like too lightheaded in a way that I just felt like emotionally more sensitive, I think, which is not what I want. I want to go in there and be like, I scheduled the first appointment of the day.
Smart.
So go in, get out, get back home and have a day. And oh, and tonight's, I have a final. I had to get a sitter.
Is this your last?
Working.
Ugh, that's so annoying.
It's really annoying to pay to take a final.
Ugh,
I mean, I'm already paying the school, but I'm like paying a lot now.
It's annoying. That's very annoying.
Yeah.
I have tentative concert plans with Jared tonight.
Oh, right. Dang it.
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to do it or not.
Griff was doing a sticker book, and he picked up an airplane and stuck it to his arm and goes, hey, look, I'm Jared. I have a tattoo.
He's good. He's good.
He's funny.
Right now, you were talking about chapstick. I have chapstick on my mouth.
Oh.
And I have Vapo-Rub. I have Vicks Vapo-Rub on my chest. And that's...
Oh, my God. I love that.
And that
Can I tell you that I was at the gym, and I had forgotten Kleenex, And I got to the gym and I'm in the workout room and I'm like,
oh no, we're snotting.
There's snot. Yeah, we're snotting. And I was like, fuck. The only thing in this room
is a wet wipe. It's an antiseptic germ wipe for when you wipe down the equipment when you're done.
Correct. So I was like, How desperate am I? Sometimes they're a little dried out. How desperate am I? And I finally got desperate, grabbed one during a workout class, went to wipe my nose, essentially chloroformed myself. It's like I was trying to kidnap me suddenly in the class. I like put it over my mouth and then was like, like literally was trying not to draw attention and was suddenly at death's door.
Oh my God.
Having been chloroformed by myself.
That's really good. I'm glad you're alive.
I was like on the floor. I was like on the floor coughing. People were like, what is wrong with you? And I was so embarrassed. I did not want to tell anyone. I knew what I was doing and did it anyway. So now Matt's like, what's with this tote bag? All it has is 6 loose Kleenexes in it. And I'm like, oh, that's my gym bag. And I'm like, it's a long story.
It's a long story, babe. You know that feeling where you have to, you know, counter offer somebody offers you money for a gig and you have to counter them?
Mm-hmm.
I don't love that feeling. Oh, and here's the other fun news. KK and I got into the Orlando Fringe in May. So we're going to go back down to Orlando. We're going to write a new show. We don't know what it is, but we're going to
write. You're going to write a new show?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really awesome.
It's awesome. I think we could do like a chick flick sequel of different chick flicks. We could do a holiday chick flick. We could do sort of like a telling of.
You should do a holiday. That's so fun.
Do all Christmas.
The holiday.
We'll do the holiday. Family Stone, sure.
Of course.
We do, you know, what else do we put in there? Like, and so do we do just like a holiday chick flick extravaganza?
Home Alone.
Home Alone, my favorite chick flick. Home Alone.
Wait, Die Hard, which you're about to meet.
Which I'm about to see for the first time.
Okay. Die Hard would be a good one because it's got Snape in it.
You know, that is really exciting. That is really exciting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Should we do some Patreon songs? You said we have people to sing to.
To our dearest friends, our new Patreons. Did we? Yeah. Okay, we already did that one. Shapuli. 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 She loves a fun time.
Shapuli. 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 Oh, I'm in the background. You have to keep singing.
Oh. Shapuli. Shapuli, you are so fun. Shapuli. We love to have in the sun. Shapuli, we are a dance. We're going to get in the pants of Shapuli. A fun time here in Patreon. We're going to record an episode after this, and it's going to be for you. Shapuli, we hope you don't miss. Thank you, Shapuli. Thank you, Shapuli. Thank you, Shapuli. Okay.
That's fine.
That's fine. Now this, Kate.
Kate, I hate that your name is Kate. I know too many Kates, so it means nothing to me. I love Kates. I love too many. It makes me think of a million people mashed up together. But now you're in that ball, that weird Kate ball in my head that I can bounce and take to bed. That's not a sexual thing, it's more a cuddly thing. Kate, Kate, did I make you feel great?
Now, Kate, I see, has been a member for 2 years when I click on her thing. So I don't know if you've upped it.
So why are we singing to Kate?
Because it looks
Kate,
like
how
it's
dare
a-
you?
Kate, you might have gotten to
quit and rejoin so you could get another song.
Hey, Kate, I don't hate it.
You know what? Fine.
Go off, queen.
What am I doing anyway?
What am I doing?
But keep in mind that you did make people hear the song that we just did, which feels pretty offensive. So you might want to apologize.
So, wait, maybe not, but yeah, let me see this one.
Let's move on.
Yes. Shapuli, says, remember for 12 days, Shapuli. Kate, it says when I click on Kate, it says Kate has been a member for 2 years. Great. Kate, good to see you again. Hey, it's like being at a party. Kate!
Welcome back.
Good to see you. Okay. It is, I think, an even number. And so technically, I'm first. And so
okay.
I'm going to tell you a story after these messages.
More than willing to hear from you. More than willing.
Let's take a pause.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Great. I got this information from the New York Times and Wikipedia, but the New York Times article was pretty good.
Pretty good.
I'm going to take you back to December 23rd, 2010. We're in Des Moines, Iowa. We're off the interstate of 80. There's a Quick Trip convenience store. There's a camera outside of that convenience store. And we see footage of a guy getting out of an SUV. This guy is in his 40s, maybe. He's a bigger build. He's wearing a black sweatshirt and the hood is pulled over his head. He's got a baseball cap and a black jacket over it. And he's walking through and his face is avoiding the cameras in the store. He grabs two hot dogs and a fountain drink. I like his style. The cashier says, "Hey." And the man responds with a low drawl, "Hello." I don't know. They just spelled it hell with a lot of O's and an H.
They did a lot of O's and they a lot of L's, or just
they did
one,
four
two L's.
O's. They went hello.
Hello.
He pulls two pieces of paper from his pocket, and they're play slips for the Hot Lotto, which is the Powerball lottery available in 14 states and Washington, D.C. And so this lotto is you pick five numbers between 1 and 39 and then a sixth between 1 and 19. If you get the first five numbers right, you win like $10,000. If you get all mm-hmm. six, the prize is huge. So in 2007, someone won $20 million, almost $20 million. The odds of winning this lottery.
That's a lot of clams.
Are you kidding? How much vongole can you make from that? The odds of winning are 1 in 10,939,383. So it's like.
I don't like those odds.
It's not a great odds. This guy's got a lot of play slips in his pocket, and they're already filled out, and there's multiple sets of numbers he's put on them. At 3:24 p.m., the cashier runs the slips through the lottery terminal, hands the guy the change, hands him his, like, receipts with all this information. The guy leaves the store, pulls down his hood, removes his cap, gets in his SUV, drives away. 6 days later, the numbers are pulled. On December 29th, 2010, the winning lotto numbers are 3, 12, 16, 26, 33, and 11. The next day, the Iowa Lottery announces that there was a winning ticket sold in Des Moines, Iowa, off of Interstate 80, at a Quick Trip convenience store, and the total prize worth $16.5 million.
Wow.
Obviously,
whoa.
You have a year to claim this prize, okay? So in Iowa, what's interesting is that you cannot be anonymous. You have to claim it as a person. That's the deal. And so they expect someone to come forward with the winning ticket. But a month goes by and no one shows up. And they know who has the winning ticket because they know have
this
video.
Guy.
It's this fucking guy. And so Iowa Lottery holds a press conference and they're like, "Hey, we have a winner, and it's not claimed." And so if you played the lottery and you heard that, you'd be like, okay, maybe it's me. So they had a bunch of people call in and being like, I'm the winner. And some people were like, oh, I lost my ticket. Some people call in, they're like, someone stole my ticket, but it was me, I swear. And then one guy is like, hey, he calls them and he's like, hey, my friend just died in a car crash. Should I go to the junkyard to search through his car? Because I know he played the lottery. Like, people are going fucking feral. People are like, hey, it's got to be me or someone
really
else.
Brings out the best in people, that lottery.
$16.5 million would make anyone go fucking insane. The lottery officials are waiting for the serial number, right? Nobody has given them the serial number for the winning ticket. 3 months after the winning ticket that was announced passes, then 6 months, then 9 months. Remember, winners have to be within a year to claim the money. It's November 9th, 2011. It's like, we're like 11 months in, 11 months in. Iowa Lottery gets a call from this guy, Philip Johnston, who's a lawyer from Canada. And he gives them the correct 15-digit lottery number. And they're like, oh, is it yours? He's like, yeah. And they're like, how old are you? And he's like, I'm in my 60s. And they're like, okay, that doesn't actually match with the video description. Okay, but like, what were you wearing when you bought the ticket? And he was like, I was wearing a sport coat and gray flannel pants. And they're like, okay.
Not even
you're
close.
Not even close. And then he calls terrible back guess. And he's like, hey, listen, I lied. And they're like, we know. And they're like, he's like, I'm helping a client claim the ticket so that he can't be identified. And they're like, sorry, like the winner needs to be identified. So Johnston withdrew his claim that it was his ticket. And the investigators of the Iowa Lottery are like, this is so weird. Like, is someone's anonymity really worth $16.5 million? And exactly 1 year to the day on December 29th, 2011, truly like the last possible moment that someone can claim this ticket, it is 2 hours before the deadline, representatives from a prominent Des Moines law firm show up with the actual winning ticket, and they're claiming the ticket on behalf of a trust. This is also not allowed. Like, there's all these loopholes. We're at a year, yeah. And, like, no one can do it. And they later look into this trust, and they see that the beneficiary is a corporation in Belize, and the president, our guy Philip Johnston, the Canadian lawyer. And so all of it, as they said, I'm going to quote the executive from the Iowa Lottery, it just absolutely stunk all over the place. They open an investigation, and, like, what is going on with this? And so Johnston will tell investigators that he was contacted by a Houston attorney, Robert Rhodes, I think, and he also mentioned a businessman in Sugar Land, Texas. That could have been Robert Rhodes, but Robert Rhodes' name popped up. And so Iowa investigators go to Texas, and then they try to find these two guys, including Robert Rhodes. They manage to avoid them. There's no luck. They don't talk to anyone. The case is opened for years with no answers. It's like passed down from investigator to investigator. And eventually in 2014, it lands on Rob Sands' desk. He's like a young guy in the prosecutor's office. He's like hungry for white collar crime. He's a good guy. But this is a case that's had, it's a long mystery, a lot of dead ends. And there's a very high chance that the lottery winner was murdered. Like, we don't know what's going on. They just don't know what the fuck is happening. And so Rob Sands is sitting on this case. It's like they don't have a ton of information, but they do have this video. And so he's like, there's one thing that we haven't done, which is release the video to the public. So they released the video to the public on October 9th, 2014. It's a 74-second clip, but we hear the guy go, hello? A few days later, the video is circulated all over the country.
The hello it, heard around the world.
It's the hello heard around the world.
Hello.
Hello. And in Maine, there's an employee from the Maine Lottery who sees the video, and he recognizes that hello. And it reminds him of this guy that spent a week in Maine Lottery, in the Maine Lottery office a few years ago, conducting a security audit of the lottery. In Des Moines, a web developer at the Iowa Lottery also recognized the voice. At another lottery office, a receptionist sees the video and is like, why am I listening to a video or listening to a tape of Eddie? Enter Eddie Tipton. He is the information security director for the Multi-State Lottery Association.
So he knew how to beat the system.
He basically, yes. He runs lotteries for 33 different
states. And that's why he didn't
want
anyone to know it's him, is everybody's going to be like, oh, that guy fucking cheated
at
the lottery.
That guy fucking works here.
The lottery guy.
He fucking built the code for the random number generator. So it's really not looking good. So he runs, this lottery that he works for runs the lotteries for 33 different states, including D.C., Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. It's all based in Des Moines. And that it also runs the Hot Lotto, obviously. Eddie grew up in rural Texas. He's very into computers. He's kind of paranoid and rarely pays with credit cards. He doesn't want people tracing his identity. But he's also a really lonely, sweet guy. Like, he has this beautiful big house, 5 bedrooms, that he, like, hopes to fill with wife and kids one day. But the right person never came. So he invites all of his friends over to his house. He's really lonely. But he hosts parties a lot. He has friends visit. He does have this $540,000 house, but he makes $100,000 a year. And so they're like, huh, can he afford that? What's going on there? Maybe there's something there. His job is to write software and work on web pages. And he handles the security network and firewalls. And he reviews security for 36 state lotteries. And so once people and his friends hear this guy's voice and recognize it's Eddie, they are in shock. One of them says it's like finding out your mother was an axe murderer. He felt betrayed.
Oh, well, he didn't do anything as bad as an axe murder. He just was trying to get a bunch of money so he could buy some friends.
Right? His friend says that he has a heart of gold, but that he also wanted to get to the bottom of it. So his friend was like, there's no way. He was a bit of a denial. He's like, there's no way that this is Eddie. There's no way this is Eddie. But he's like a computer programmer. So what he did, he's like, there's got to be something wrong. He takes a surveillance footage into an audio software and he removes the, feels like Law and Order, where they like remove the background noise, isolate the thank you, or isolate the hello. And then he had recorded Eddie the night before saying hello. And so he like merged the two and he was like, it was the utter match. Sound wave and everything. Like he isolated the video and his friend and was like, it's him.
Yeah.
So then the next day, this friend also, this feels like a friend who really did not want it to be his friend Eddie and was trying everything he could to make it not. The next day, this guy goes to the Quick Trip because he sees where the video was taken. And he measures the dimensions of the tiles on the floor and the height of the shelving units and the distance between the door and the cash register. He does that to compare the hand size, foot size, and height of the man to confirm it also was Eddie, which I just think is very...
I just love everybody trying to be like, it's not. Nope, it is.
It is. It is. So obviously it's our guy Eddie, and he's arrested in January of 2015, and he's charged with 2 felony counts of fraud. They have him on video. They have call records that say he was around the area, even though he denied being there, to corroborate. But they just didn't know how he did it. And at this trial, they were like, listen, we don't need to know how he did it. We just need to know if he did it. And so his friend was like, I think he used this thing called rootkits, which is malicious software that can be installed with a flash drive in order to control the computer while masking its existence until it deletes itself later. So they're like, maybe this is like Mission Impossible style.
What did you
style.
Just say?
Exactly. They're like, maybe there's this like Mission Impossible style like thing that he's doing with these systems. But I mean, that feels like maybe a red herring. I don't know if he was that sophisticated. He did have access to the random number generator. And so again, the jury didn't need to know the exact way he did it, but they just needed to know that he did it. And they found him guilty in 2015, and he's going to be sentenced to 10 years in prison. He would eventually appeal. The state Supreme Court later dismissed his conviction on one of the charges, which is tampering with lottery equipment, because they couldn't prove how he tampered, and the case was sent back to the district court. Now, Rob Sand, the guy who's prosecuting this or investigating this, is like, okay, we got our guy, but like, something was still bothering him about this, which is that Eddie's lawyer demanded a 90-day speedy trial. So this cut the prosecutor's time to fully investigate the case. And he's like, it's very rare that you catch someone the first time they do this. It's highly likely that, like, this guy's been doing this before. And so one morning, Rob gets this call from a guy in Texas and is like, hey, you know Eddie's brother, Tommy, the justice of the peace? He won the lottery 10 years ago. So Rob is like, oh, maybe there's more to this. So Rob calls this guy in Texas and the FBI and is like, what's going on? And this guy's like, are you talking about my Bigfoot case? And Rob is like, wait, what? Tom Bargas. Tom Bargas is this guy who contacted the police back in 2006 with a very suspicious story. Bargas owned 44 fireworks stands in Texas. And so 2 times a year, he had a shit ton of money on 4th of July and New Year's. And he's had a bunch of cash on hand. And he gets a call from a local justice of the peace. And he's like, hey, I got $500,000 in cash that I want to swap with your money. And Bargas is like, what's wrong with your money? And so the justice of the peace makes like $35,000 a year. And so he's like, why does he have this much money? So Tom calls the FBI. Tom Bargas calls the FBI and is like, hey, this guy wants to swap a bunch of money. Is this legit? The FBI wires him. He swaps $450,000 and the police are like, oh, this is, or the FBI is like, this has got to be a public corruption. And so they start to investigate the serial numbers on the bill. And then a couple months later, the FBI investigating this case get a call that the justice of the peace that they're investigating is in a Houston hospital with 2 shattered legs because he fell 31 feet out of a tree because he was hunting Bigfoot. And so what they find out is that this guy was in Colorado hunting Bigfoot. And him and his wife were on the outs, and he won the lottery, and he was trying to keep the money away from his wife, which is why he swapped the serial numbers. And so that was the case closed. It was like, oh, this guy won the lottery, wanted to keep it away from his wife. It wasn't public corruption. Let's move on. However, the man who was hunting Bigfoot, who won the lottery in Colorado, is Tommy Tipton, Ed Tipton's brother. So they started looking at all the lottery wins, and they were cross-referencing it with people Eddie knew on Facebook, all that good stuff. In September 2015, they learned that this guy in Wisconsin won a lottery worth $783,000. This guy, his name, Robert Rhodes. You might remember the guy Robert Rhodes. Rhodes and Eddie are like best friends. This guy, Kyle Kahn, won $644,000 in the Oklahoma lottery. They find this guy's phone number. They cross-reference it with Tommy Tipton's cell phone records, Eddie's brother. Boom, we got another hit. A Kansas lottery worth $15,000 is another friend of Eddie's. Another woman in Iowa, Amy Warwick, she had gone on a date with Eddie Tipton, and their relationship became just friends. But Tipton told her he couldn't claim a winning lottery ticket because of his job, so she could claim it, and she could keep a significant portion of it as a gift for her recent engagement, which, like, I kind of love that he's asking friends. I mean, I would love to go on a date with a guy and him to be like, hey, I won the lottery. Can you cash this? That sounds like a great thing. I'm hoping every person I've ever broken up with considers me for this opportunity. But they're still like, how is this guy doing it? So investigators in Wisconsin are looking at this random number generator that was used in 2007 when Robert Rhodes won that lottery. And it's sitting in storage, and it had not been wiped clean yet, which is exciting. And so they're able, they enlist a computer expert to conduct an investigation, and they do a forensic analysis and reverse engineering. And they're able to find 21 lines of pseudocode. The code is small enough.
Pseudocode?
Basically, the code is small enough that it cannot radically change the size of the file, which would create suspicion. And the code hadn't really been hidden. It just, you needed to know what you were looking for. The program was called Quantum Vision Random Number Generator. And the way that Eddie Tipton said it is like it wasn't an evil plan to get rich. This was just like a computer nerd's attempt to crack the system. Quote, it was never my intent to start a full out ticket scam. It occurred to me like, wow, I could do this. I could be making a living doing this. It was like some mob-related thing. I just give this information to the mob, and then they would go out and win the lotteries left and right. Nobody would know. But, you know, I didn't have any mob ties. I don't know anybody. I gave tickets to friends or family. He said he got the idea from an accountant at one of the lottery offices where the accountant reached, like, said one day and was like, hey, did you put secret numbers in there? And he's like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, you can set numbers on any given day since you wrote the software. And he said, just like that, a little seed was planted. And then during one slow period, I just had a thought that it's possible. And I tried it, and I put it in. And so his extra code was, like, very specific. It wasn't every day that he knew the answers. It had to be on a Wednesday or a Saturday evening, and it had to be on one of three dates in a non-leap year. So it was May 27th. November 23rd or December 29th?
Probably for the best in the sense that I'm like, how much faster would he have gotten caught if he was like, every time I just... They're like, wait, the only people winning this are live in a block radius. Like,
totally. But the funny thing is he's like, the investigators, like, these dates were around Memorial Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas when Eddie Tipton was typically on vacation. So it feels a little bit more premeditated. If these criteria were satisfied, the random number generator was diverted to a different track, and instead the algorithm would use a predetermined seed number that restricted the pool of potential winner numbers to a much smaller predictable set of numbers. So like I said before, the odds of winning the hot lotto was like basically 11 million, right, in one? But with this number generator, it was one in a few hundred. So that's why he came in with this like big set of dates. Each seat had 35 or so sets of six numbers. And that's how he's able to get this. So in 2017, Eddie accepted a plea deal for masterminding the largest lottery scam in American history with one count of ongoing criminal conduct. And part of that package deal allowed that his brother, Tommy Tipton, our Bigfoot hunter, was only sentenced to 75 days. And part of the plea deal was he had to explain exactly how he did it. And at sentencing, Tipton said, "Well, I certainly regret my actions. It's difficult to say that with all the people behind me that I hurt, and I regret it. I'm sorry." He was sentenced to the maximum of 25 years, but he will probably be out on parole within 7 years. He also has to pay a restitution of $2.2 million. And what's interesting, as another caveat, Rob Sand, the guy who sort of put this guy away and figured it all out, he left shortly thereafter and started running for office. And right now, he's actually running to be the governor of Iowa. And that's a story.
Get out there and vote, folks.
Get out there and vote, folks. That's the story of Eddie Tipton, the guy who scammed the lotto.
I like that story. Bravissimo! Hello!
Hello? I imagine it was like, the way I've seen it is like a Tim Allen. It's like a spirit. Like, I can't imagine someone going, hello. Like, I can't imagine. I don't know if I have a recognizable hello, but I just think it's funny. Oh, by the way, the article. Hold on, let me see. I want to make sure I give this. Hold on. Rob Sand.
Side it up.
The article. New York Times. The Man Who Cracked the Lottery. By Reed Forgrave. It's a great article.
I would like to bring you a story. So my parents went to the Galapagos, and they just are getting back this week, and got me thinking about the Galapagos. And I was like, it's really crazy. They're sending these pictures of these amazing animals. And I read a really amazing rumor that tortoises on the Galapagos, who have ostensibly been alive forever, like maybe they are God, they can tell what's on someone's mind, and if someone comes to the Galapagos for the wrong reasons, they curse them.
What?
That's true. So that's a fact.
Did your parents go there for the right reasons?
Scientifically proven fact. Yes. Which was to see those tortoises and basically pay homage. So it's like, okay. Of course, the tortoises are like, welcome, you're allowed. But I want you to keep that in mind as I tell you this amazing story brought to you by BBC, Terracer Travels, Thought Co., Utterly Interesting, and a documentary called The Galapagos Affair, Satan Comes to Eden. It is important that I tell you that in that movie, I was like, "What? Whose voice is that?" Because they're doing things like reading. They have some really cool old footage and pictures that they use, but they're also doing a voiceover reading a lot of people's diaries that they kept. And one of them is Cate Blanchett reading the diary, and that's why it was familiar. Floriana Island is part of the Galapagos in the south, and it was discovered by a Panamanian bishop in 1535, but it went uninhabited till the 1920s. Yeah. So nobody's trying to live there, even though people were living in other islands. Like, I think Santa Cruz had a few people living on it as well. But it was a convict colony for a while. And then it was a hideout for pirates for a while. Charles Darwin.
Heard of him.
Visited, but didn't live there. But then it doesn't get actually people trying to move there and live there until 1929-ish. And those people are German, what I read in one article called them, German dropouts. I think they mean like dropping out of society because no one's there. So Floriana, let's talk about who moves to Floriana. The first couple to move there are Friedrich Ritter, who's 43 years old, and his partner, Dor Strauch. The story with them is already bizarre. It's said that he had been a doctor in Berlin. She had been a teacher. And right before they leave Europe, this was not in the documentary, but I read it, they switch partners. So in other words, Friedrich's wife moved in with Dor's husband back in Europe, in Germany. Like, they swapped partners.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow.
Okay. So you're already like, that seems interesting.
It does seem interesting.
Yes. And they're like, basically, the vibe I got from the very beginning watching the documentary was that Friedrich is a narcissistic asshole. And he is into philosophers and very oh, society's broken and it's trash and having to do things that have to do with money and power, it makes no sense. So I need to go somewhere completely untouched and that will make me a superior person, is how it felt. And Dor is like, wow, it's cult leadery. I got to follow this narcissist. I got to do what he says, even though I have MS. And he's a doctor. Even though I have MS, and I should probably, it won't be that fun to be on an island with nothing where I have to build shelter and seek food and work my ass off, and I have MS. But they want isolation. And she says things like, Friedrich is my teacher, my guide, and my fate. So they're going to go. And In the documentary, his nephew says he was a genius with a dark side, which I definitely see. We see that he doesn't love people. And you would think, oh, maybe he doesn't love people, but he loves Dor. No, he's not nice to Dor at all. And he doesn't believe in medicine, even though he's a doctor. So he's very like, stop your MS. He's like a Christian Scientologist. He didn't say he was, but it's the vibe of, if you think you're not sick, you'll not be sick, which feels like it puts a lot of blame on Dor for her own MS and the idea that she can think herself healthy. I read that they got their teeth removed to prevent dental problems.
That's one way to do it.
That's one way to do it.
So it might affect your nourishment.
Agree. I think they might have dentures. They didn't look like they had no teeth in any of the pictures. So I don't know if that's a rumor, but that's another thing. There's so many rumors that it's hard to wade through because they want to write about these strange people that go to this island to do this. So they have to. There's some amount of speculation happening. So now they're on the island. Dor is like, this is hard. This is much harder than I thought to live on this deserted island and have to do everything for myself. Some days I feel like I can't move another step. And of course, Friedrich is like, you know, Nietzsche says suffering is life. It's like, which I'm sure is great to hear. But they're vegetarians. They're going to be Adam and Eve.
And living off the land.
They're like, this is beautiful. Let's do this thing. The journals suggest that Dor is not just disappointed in the island, but a little disappointed in Friedrich, who she's put all this trust in and who does not ever say anything nice to her. She starts to like become friends with a donkey on the island and really just hang out with it. And it's the vibe of like she needs somebody to cuddle. And so she's like snuggling this donkey and being like, or it's a bull. I'm sorry. It's not a donkey. It's a bull. And Friedrich will be like, ugh, her affection for this animal. It's so beastly. It's so human. It's so gross. And she's like, I would love it if literally anyone else came to the island.
That'd be nice.
Some scientists do come and visit them. About 20 of them head there because they're curious. They want to talk to them. And their impressions of Friedrich and Dor, that they're really smart people. They're really creative. They're having, you know, Friedrich's having to sort of invent all these ways to get the things that they need to survive. And they can, like, they go to meet them and Dor is like, this is great. So happy to see somebody else. And she starts to almost cry when they leave, where it's like, oh God, alone with Friedrich again, huh? And they board the scientist's boat and there's music on the boat and Dor's so excited. She's like dancing. She's so happy. She's like, this is wonderful. And Friedrich's like lecturing her about the dangers of her, you know, her silly folly. Like, you silly woman.
Oh my God. We're in Footloose in the Galapagos Islands. Like, what is happening?
And they give them all these gifts that at first Friedrich's like, no. Kind of like, I want to do it by myself. And then being on a desert island, he is like, all right, I'll take some of the stuff. I'll take some of the milk and rice or whatever they're giving. You know,
it's all so romantic and still you have to manage your own sewage. Like, it's all so fun to live off.
You know what? I'll take the gun. Yeah, you know, I'll take the rice. Yeah, I'll take, so you, you know, you take some of the stuff. Now, they've been there a few years, and in August of 1932, another couple with their son decide to move to Floriana. Imagine, you're on a desert island, you have no neighbors, and then, like, somebody else is like, I'm going to live there, too. And it's not tough. Up to you, but you're like, I think Dore's probably excited, Friedrich's probably super bummed, but Heinz and Margaret Wittmar from Cologne go there with their 12-year-old son, Harry. Harry's actually Heinz's son from a previous marriage. And they're wanting to go to the island seems twofold. They think that there's an economic crisis happening in Germany. And so they're putting all their money just into leaving. Like, they're like, let's take all our savings and just go here where you don't really use money, which feels, yes.
What year is this?
1932.
I will say, getting out of Germany in 1932 is a flex, because Hitler is about to come into power in 33. So I gotta say, using your money to be like, I'm getting the fuck out of there, smart.
But it's interesting because they're a little different, like, than Dore and Friedrich. They're not, like, they show up there and Margaret's like, I don't know. And Heinz is like, was this a good idea? This is crazy. We're on this desert island. But they also have Harry, their son, who has lung and eye diseases, and they think that the climate there and just being on this island could help. It's a big move to go there because Margaret is pregnant. So they're also landing there while she's pregnant. And part of going there and knowing that the only inhabitants include a doctor and you're pregnant is definitely something that factors into her making that decision. Friedrich knows that, and he's pissed because he's like, what the fuck? I'm not your doctor, and I'm not a doctor. Like, I might have, like, medical knowledge, but I moved here to get away from people, not to owe anybody anything, not to have any relations with any other people, not, like, no, fuck you. You're like, and she knows that she's got this feeling of like, well, if I go into labor and you don't do shit to help me, that's on you. Like, that's something you're going to have to live with. So it's a little tense from the beginning. And Dore, who is very, I hate that women act like housewives, and I want to be an intellectual, and I want to live an exciting life, and I want to be with this philosopher asshole. She meets Margaret and has this feeling of, oh, you're one of those fucking housewives. You know, like, it's like, oh, you're a housewife. So Dore has a feeling toward Margaret as well, where she seems to really look down on her. Mm-hmm. And similarly, when they meet, I think that Margaret's like, oh, there's another woman here around my age. Let's chat. And then she's like, this bitch is trying to talk to me about Nietzsche. What the fuck? Like, what? So nobody's psyched to be friends is what I get from it. Then, to complicate things further, the weirdest inhabitant of all arrives on the island. Her name is Eloise Verborn de Wagner-Bosquet. That might not be her real name. She calls herself the Baroness. And she shows up and she's like, I'm the Baroness, and here's my two lovers, Rudolf Lorenz and Robert Philipson, and we are here as well. We're a thruple. I'm a would-be queen, essentially. I will live here in this orange grove by this stream. And they're all like, what? Like, she just walks in and is like, here's where I'm going to live, you guys. And Margaret and Heinz are like, it is crazy that we have been here a few months and already have crazy neighbors. She sits down in the chairs that they have set up and starts ordering her two men around, and they're washing her feet and bringing her things. And they're like, what do we make of this wild woman? What are you doing here? And she's like, I'm going to build a luxury hotel in Floriana. And they're like, all right. She's like, it's called Hacienda Paradiso. And it's going to be for wealthy Americans to come visit. And it's going to be amazing. And knowing this, I have brought with me cows, donkeys, and chickens, and a lot of cement. And that's my plan. And they're like, very cool. You whack job. everybody's just doesn't know what to make of her. She's such a character. And she's got these two, as they said, gigolos bringing her tea. It's just, they're just like, what is happening? Then I told you there's some people. The documentary talks about the settlers, that there were several families that were settlers in Santa Cruz too. I'm not focusing on that island at all, but that's got its own stories and its own small groups of families that settled there and strange things that happened, including spouse swapping. It's a very strange story as well. But for the purposes of this story, we're just staying in Floriana. And what you need to know is that some people from Santa Cruz will sometimes come to Floriana to hunt. So they come over on a boat and they hunt for food and they shoot a cow that ends up being one of the Baroness's cows. She runs out with a gun screaming, and she's basically telling the people of Santa Cruz, I own this island and everything on it. And Friedrich's hearing this. You got to imagine, he's like, what? You own the island? What are you talking about? So no one loves the Baroness. Now Margaret has been pregnant long enough that it's time. She goes into labor. It sounds like one of those fucking labors that just won't end. 72 hours. She's blacking out in pain. She lives in this cave and she's trying to give birth in this cave. And she's like, go get the doctor. The doctor comes in about 3 hours after she asks for him. He's not rushing to help, but he does help.
Okay.
He does examine her. He does help deliver her baby, Rolf. And Rolf is the first child ever born on the island of Floriana. And everyone kind of comes together in this moment. You can imagine how exciting and strange it is to have a newborn baby on the island. So the Baroness comes and brings clothes from boutiques in France that she for some reason has. You're like, why did she bring baby clothes?
You know, for the hotel.
Yeah, for the hotel. That's right. So there's like a general feeling of warmth and goodwill happening between everybody because of this baby. It unites them. Dr. Friedrich is telling Margaret, you know, don't let the baby sleep on a bed that's too soft or he'll become lazy. So she's having her baby sleep on like cement, on like a rock wall. Like,
on the cement that the Baroness brought.
Everyone's coming together. One of many cements, yes. So the annual visit from the scientists happens. So the scientists come because they're like, they get on the island and there's signs for Haciendo Paradiso that the Baroness has made with lipstick. And they're like, all right.
This is wild.
They're like, what's the deal? And everybody's like, oh, you're not going to believe this bitch. She's got a machine gun and two husbands. It's very weird. And they're like, okay. And they say, the scientists say that going and seeing Friedrich and Dore's home, going and seeing where the Baroness and they live, it's filthy and just they keep it kind of a wreck. And then they go to where Margaret lives, who has the two kids. And she, true to her title as a homemaker, has made a sort of beautiful place and made it really nice. And they had met Friedrich and Dore, you'll recall. And so the scientists, so they're like, hey, we brought you more gifts. And the Baroness is like, what? I think we have to divide these fairly. I think we should put them all together and divide them fairly. So you can, you know, it's like if somebody brings something to the island, it's for all of us. And Dore and Friedrich are like, yo, those are our friends. So there's some aggression and it upsets everybody because you have to think that we don't know what the fuck the Baroness is doing, but we have to think that Friedrich and Dore and Heinz and Margaret came to the island to get away from commerce in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And as soon as things, modern things hit the island, modern aggressions come out and it feels like we want that property. We want your property. We want your money. It reminds them of what they tried to leave. So upon leaving this time, the scientists' takeaway is the Ritters seem to be troublemakers. The Witmars are doing great. They're very impressed with them. And the Baroness is fun, but a fucking loose cannon. The Baroness wanting to have leadership over the island creates tons of tensions. She's trying to control the resources of the island. She's trying to control incoming food and mail that happens. She's just trying for it to be her island. And she's kind of just calling it hers. So the Ritters and the Witmars go to the Ecuadorian authorities to try to end the situation. And so the government's trying to get involved, dividing the island, but the Baroness somehow legally wins access then to the spring. And it feels like she's getting control of pieces of the island. And this is the start of even more warlike tension. She's loving being the center of attention, by the way. Like, she, if that wasn't already clear, she's somebody that loves everybody looking at her, loves everybody talking about her. So it feels like she's spreading rumors about herself when people come to the island, so that when people go back, they'll write about her in the press and the narrative will be about her. Mm. So there's all these rumors of, like, who is this Baroness? Then she gets somebody to come to the island to make a movie. And the movie, she wrote it herself. And one of her main lover, is it Robert? I think his name's Robert. Robert somebody. Phillips. Her main lover is going to be in it with her. And it's a story about getting a guy to kill your lover, basically, which will be prophetic in some ways. So she, in this, they have this movie about her as a pirate that's a black and white movie. You know, it's one of those movies where they show the action and then they have the card that says the text. Yeah. And it's very stupid and very, what do you call it? Like, melodramatic. And what is it called? Oh, it had such a good name. I wish I could remember the name of it. Let me look it up because I want to tell you. The pirate movie. The Empress of Floriana, and she plays the Empress, is the name of the film that they decide to make. And yeah, you could, in this movie, you get to see the whole thing, and it is wackadoodle doozer bears. Her other lover, Rudolph Lorenz, at this point, even though he's still part of that triangle, he has been relegated to more waiting on herself and Robert. Like, they're like, you're actually the slave. And he's like, oh, that sucks for me. He, because he's lost his position, doesn't mind talking shit now. So he'll go to the others and be like, she's actually just an ex-dancer that I met. And she's married. I met her in Paris. We got a boutique together. We started running it. Then we hired Robert as a salesman to work for us. And now it feels like the tables have really turned, where I owned this boutique with her and he was our salesman. And now I, like, wait on them. This blows. There's also a lot of speculation that the Baroness might have been sleeping with other men on the island. There's a picture of Friedrich, despite a lot, everyone was like, Friedrich hated the Baroness, and there's a picture where he has his arm around her.
You can, and everybody hate, looks, you can at hate that, someone and still want to bone them.
Especially if you live on a desert island.
Yeah, and you're a narcissist.
We know he hates Dor, so it's a little, we don't know what was going on. People call them enemies. They might have been more than enemies, if you know what I mean. Then there's a drought. A bunch enemies of the animals die. Enemies with benefits. There's a drought. A bunch of the animals die. Everybody's freaked out. Everybody's afraid. Lorenz gets tuberculosis. He's getting beaten all the time by Robert Phillipson. His life really sucks. It sounds like dark days. He wants to not live with the couple anymore. So he goes to Dor and Friedrich, and they're like, we don't want to get involved. The Baroness is crazy. We don't want to deal with this. So he goes to Margaret, and she takes him in, and she says that the Baroness would come by each day to, like, visit her lover, check on him. And then one day she comes and Lorenz leaves with her. Like, she entices him back to be with her. And Dor is writing in her journal about all this happening, and she's like, being on this island does bring out your primitive, like, the primitive parts of all of us, which is intense. And Hines gets pissed and rages against the Baroness, and he says things like, I want to take things into my own hands. So everyone's getting really angry with each other. Everything's getting really heightened. Dor also notes in her journal that Lorenz feels like he's really getting pushed to his edge. It's getting to be so toxic that it feels like something's in the air. Something's going to happen. I read that Friedrich is physically abusing Dor and that people witness that. And Lorenz is telling the Wittmars, Hines and Margaret, I'm afraid for my life because I think the Baroness is going to try to kill me. So things are like hot, hot. One day, Dor and Friedrich are sitting. Now, they don't all live next to each other. They take a lot of space on the island, as you can imagine. But one day, Dor and Friedrich are sitting on their, porch. They don't really have a porch. They're sitting outside. They hear a woman's shriek. And they're like waiting for someone to come running because it's that kind of shriek. Like something terrible has happened. Someone's going to come tell us. And no one comes. Then the next day, Margaret and Lorenz come. And they tell a story that Dor says sounds rehearsed, where they say, 3 days ago, we heard visitors at the Baroness's compound, and we went, and there was a yacht, and she said that she and Robert were going to leave the island to go to Tahiti because this hotel plan just wasn't working out, and they told Lorenz he could have all the stuff they were leaving behind. And Dor's like, wait, they left? And they're like, yeah, they're gone. And she's like, on a yacht. And she's like, a yacht that we didn't see that came to the island. And they're like, mm-hmm. And they go to where they were living, the Baroness and Robert. Mm-hmm. And they're not there. And that's it. They're gone. And Lorenz is like, do you guys want to buy any of their stuff? Because it's mine now and I can sell it. Do you want to buy any of it? That they have a lot of good stuff at Hacienda Paradiso, at their little hut that they had that they were going to turn into the hotel. Do you want to buy any of it? And they walk to Hacienda, Dor and Friedrich. And on the way, they pass Margaret's house. And they notice that in Margaret's house, she has this beautiful new tablecloth that they recognize as having been the Baroness's. And they show up at where they used to live, and they look inside and everything is there. Not a thing was taken, not a thing, including this copy of the portrait of Dorian Gray that the Baroness always used to carry with her. And she said she never went anywhere without it, that it was special to her and a good luck charm. And there, it's like sitting pretty weird with Dor and Friedrich. They're like, whoa.
Oh dear.
Interesting. Disappeared without a trace, took nothing with them. Even in Margaret's journal, who we feel like is on Lorenz's side, she seems like, golly, I wonder what happened. Everyone is suspicious, but Dor and Margaret, it seems like, have no reason to. Can you imagine being alone on a desert island with this man, Lorenz, who is pushed to a point? You're not going to be like, I suspect you. That's scary.
What, there's like no criminal justice system in this
it's
island.
A lawless land. It's there's a no lawless one to protect land. Them so
Jesus.
And they're like, did maybe was Hines Friedrich was part of it, maybe yeah. Friedrich was part of it. They're like, we just, it could, like,
nobody say anything.
Literally everyone's looking at each other like, did you do it? And it's really intense. So somehow Lorenz does manage to sell stuff to other people. I think probably people of San, I don't know, people off the island. I don't really know. But he's able to hire a Norwegian fisherman to take him to San Cristobal Island. And he wants to, like, catch a ship back to Europe. He wants to return to Germany. He's done with this experiment. And this man named Neugierhoot is like, come with
sorry,
me.
Sorry, what? What
Neugierhoot.
Is that? Oh my God,
I mean, it sounded, that's what it sounded like they said. They're like, here's this Captain Neugierhoot. And he's like, oh, I can help. And I'm with a Swedish writer that wanted to visit the Baroness. And they're like, oh, the Baroness. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She disappeared on a yacht nobody ever saw. She's been gone for 4 months and no one's ever seen her. And Lorenz is about to leave with Noogerhoot, and he turns to Margaret or Dor, I forget who, and he's like, it's weird. I'm really afraid, and I don't know why. But I'm going to go with this Swedish writer and this Captain Noogerhoot. And they leave, and they go to San Cristobal, and they're going to leave to go to San Cristobal. And Noogerhoot's like, we can't leave. It's too dangerous. It's Friday the 13th. And Lorenz is like, what? We have to go. Like, I will pay you. What are you talking about? It's Friday the 13th. And then he's like, and he's like, I'll pay you. Let's go. And Noogerhoot's finally like, okay. But then no one ever sees them again. And boats go to look for them, and they are like, they're gone. We can't find them. Dor is writing journals that say that she and Friedrich are finally living peacefully together, and that he's even tender to her at times. Things have got, are like, better. Meanwhile, Margaret's writing journals.
Guilt will do that.
But Margaret's writing journals that say the opposite of what Dor's journals say. She's like, Friedrich and Dor are fighting all the time. Friedrich is saying that Dor's getting worse and worse and more difficult to live with. We're all running short on food, and they're vegetarians. So we have like chickens and we have meat on the island, but they're vegetarians. So they're like grouchy because they're not eating. And Dor fucked up and fed the chickens poisonous pig meat and they died. So we lost a bunch of chickens. Due to really low food resources, Dor is like, me and Friedrich are going to have to eat meat. So we're going to try to cook this chicken that I think died because of the poisoned pig meat, which seems like you shouldn't eat the dead chicken that got poisoned. So she's like, we'll just boil the hell out of it. It'll be safe. So she supposedly boils this chicken, feeds it to her vegetarian partner. She says she eats, in her journal, she's like, well, I ate most of it. He only ate a little, but then he gets really, really, really sick. And Dor goes to Margaret and she's like, he's really sick. So we got to get back to him. And they get back to him. He's got a swollen tongue. He is dying. Again, we watch as Dor's journal and Margaret's journal and their accounts of what happened next are the exact opposite, where Dor's like, oh God, it was so beautiful. He seemed better in the morning. He looked at me. It was beautiful. It was like the sun in his hair. And he looked at me through these crystal eyes and it was so gorgeous. And then he died. It was so peaceful. And Margaret is like, what happened was that Friedrich looked like he was in terrible pain. And he was like, well, this is ironic. I'm a vegetarian and I'm dying of fucking food poisoning from eating meat. And he motioned for a piece of paper and wrote on it, I curse you with my dying breath, and looked at Dor and gave it to her. And he was glaring at her. He looked like he hated her. She was trying to touch him. He was
okay.
Knocking her away from him every time she tried to touch him. And then he died.
Oh my God.
They bury him on the island of Floriana. And Margaret is like, it's weird because it feels like Dor should have come to us sooner because Friedrich's a doctor, or she could have come to Heinz sooner because like Friedrich would have known he was dying. And it feels weird to her. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm not saying anything, but I am saying something. Also, if Dor ate more meat than him, why didn't she get sick at all? Her story is that she ate most of the chicken and he ate a little and then he died of food poisoning. I don't know.
Seems suspicious.
So like Dor's journals are like, things are going great between us. We're more in love than ever.
Oh, God.
P.S. I ate most of the chicken. P.S. He died looking through a like rose-colored glasses at me. And Margaret's like, they were fighting a lot. It was getting worse and worse. Then he died screaming and saying, I curse you with my dying breath. There's like two very different stories that we have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Dor writes to a captain and is like, I'd love to leave. I'd love some help. Meanwhile, Lorenz and the fishermen, their bodies are found on a nearby island, Marchena Island. It is further north and everyone speculates that what must have happened is that the ship boy that was with them is never found. But the theory is that their boat either ran out of gas or broke and then got swept onto Marchena and that they died of thirst because that was an island that didn't have any fresh water. So, dead. Ugh. Left on Friday the 13th. died.
So finally, they know.
These folks show up on Florenia. They've heard of Dr. Ritter's death. Dor is like, I'm thrilled to see you. I'm going to leave with you. I'm going to go record my deposition. I'm going to get an issued death certificate for Friedrich. And then I'm going to publish some of his letters. And the letters she publishes allude that Margaret and Hines knew something more than they were saying about the disappearance of the Baroness and Ronald.
My God.
So the backstabbing. We're
going to burn it all down.
It's at the tippy, tippy top. The Vintners. So, oh, and then she's trying to, meanwhile, like the rest of her life, of Dor's life, is that she's trying to get Friedrich's writings about philosophy published to no avail. She dies of MS in 1947. The Baroness and Robert never found.
Yeah.
Harry, the little boy that came, that was Margaret and Heinz's son, dies in a boating accident. He drowns in 1952.
Oh.
Heinz, the dad, dies of natural causes a decade after that. And the baby that was born on the island, Rolf, starts a tour company of the Galapagos Islands. The Vintners stay, Heinz and Margaret, and they open a hotel. Just like the Baroness wanted to.
What do they
to.
Call it? Hacienda Paradiso? Great.
Oh my God, I do not think so. That's so dark. But Margaret did publish a book about her, about the events on the island. But other than publishing the book, she won't talk about it. Like if you ask her point blank anything about it, she's like, nah. Like I feel like she knows a lot. She saw a lot and it was dark as hell. She died when she was 95 years old in the year 2000.
Wow.
Yeah. She survived everybody. But the debate around all the different deaths and mystery, it feels like it's rife with backstabbing and mystery and death. And the only people that know what happened are the people that are there, but they're all telling a different story.
They're all dead. And there was like six of them, like, or not six, but there was like 10, like there was 10 people on that island, right? Like two, four.
Margaret Vittmer's descendants still live there to this day.
Wow. Did Margaret die on the island?
Yeah, I think she and Heinz stayed. They stayed on the island. They lived out their days there.
She died at 95 on the island.
96, maybe.
96. That's crazy. Actually, yeah. That's wild.
To live to that late on a desert island is crazy to begin with. But what a tale. What a story. The Galapagos Affair. It's just like I loved reading it. It was such a good mystery. I loved reading about it. I loved watching this documentary.
It's a fun.
And getting to see. You get to see footage of all these people. And it's, you know, it's old grainy black and white footage where you can't hear their voices. And then they couple the images of them with these actors' voices reading their journals. But everybody was keeping journals because what else are you fucking doing on a desert island?
Seriously.
And they were like, we're making history. And they really were.
Wow.
It just went Lord of the Flies so quickly.
Yeah. I think it's that,
and
like,
it felt like
human
they had
nature.
This, like, yes, but they had this idea, like, if we just get away from the mainland, we're going to be getting away from greed and lust and all these like basically we're leaving all these sins behind us for this
boy,
pure
does
way
it
of life.
Follow boy does it follow
it follows
that's so that's wild I think especially too because to start from scratch and just to like I that's fascinating
yeah
wow thank you for sharing that story
well that's all I got. Hasta la pasta, baby.
Bye, dear readers.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.